Scott, your host on 102.9 this morning on Sharing the Burden. I'm live with Raj from Barrie. Raj has been through a great year, as we discussed in the first part of the program. And a year of sobriety means now get down to a lot of new kind of work, because I've listened to so many different stories about people. And one of the major messages, and I remember when this was given to my son, I was so angry, you know, in the his sponsor, actually, similar to yours, Raj had said, now it's very important, Shaw, you can't get cocky now. You know, you've got to... And I remember thinking, you know, because he's my son, poor little guy, he's worked so hard, he's finally got this year, and here's this guy that he looks up to telling him, you know, you better, you know, don't think you're anywhere, because you're... And I thought, well, Raj's a lot older, and he'll get that by now, but that's a tough spot for the young guys when they get a year, I'll tell you. You know, it's because we want to be cocky. I mean, I still want to be cocky, and so I can imagine... at 25 or whatever he was at that time. But looking at a couple of things this morning, Raj, one of them that I found somehow from the reading in the Life Recovery Devotional this morning, one of these two readings anyway, I found that, you know, right and wrong are really what this whole world's all about. Right and wrong in the sense of, well, my right or your right or Jay's right probably is... you know, a godly kind of existence. Not even godly necessarily, but just making the right kind of moves. You know, we know innately, I think, and Scripture tells us that too, that we know what's right and what's wrong. But we make the wrong choice very often. And, you know, why do I? I mean, the people who have a decision or a desire to make the right decision, in my idea, are the ones I want to hang around with, because none of us are perfect. But if we want to, you know, if we have that desire to do the right thing, we're probably working on the same stuff. If we choose the other way of life, you know, which unfortunately is the way of the world, you know, a lot of us believe that the world's not run by anything good. It's run by, you know, the evil one, some people even say, and, you know, when they're talking around scriptural references and so on. But, and I kind of believe that, you know, not so much what you want to call evil, you know, if you want to name it or put a personage to it. But I believe it's out there, and I believe a lot of people choose that, you know, choose lust, choose greed, choose power, choose to put other people down so you can be up. You know, that's a way of life for the lion's share out there, and sadly Hollywood and so on is kind of promoting that, you know. And we've got young people across the nation who, you know, are just dying inside to become like, you know, Bieber or whomever, and only to know that it's an absolute sure way to end up very ill, you know, emotionally, and you know, with you know, addictive problems. And it's just, the whole industry is riddled in almost 100%. So, I mean, what on earth other than evil could make, you know, a whole world want to be a certain way that is almost certain moral and you know, immoral and disaster? Why? You know, if you can answer that, we can probably end the show. But, you know, we do know the difference between right and wrong. And, you know, it's what we choose so often, you know. And we know today that addiction has another element to it. And you mentioned your childhood, and it's everything. But there's genetics in there, too. You know, like my dad was alcoholic. My son's alcoholic was while he was alive. And, you know, I tended to go the same route, but I didn't have the genetics. You know, I drank like alcoholics for years and years and years, but always by choice. It was never a, you know, never a had-to thing, although at one point I had to say, well, Scott, you better see, you know, after 20 years of this stuff, has this stuff got a hold on you? And it literally did not in my case. I had a lot of mental and emotional things that needed a lot of work, and I found that out by working 12 steps on account of my son. But I didn't have the genetics that kept drawing me back to that thing. You know, I was able to make a decision that not only did it not have a hold on me, I could do quite easily without it, you know. And I watched different people in the world of addiction, and it's not like that. And I watched my son, I've watched you, I've watched others, and their lives are literally controlled by this evil thing we call addiction, the disease of addiction. And that's genetic. I don't care what anybody says, you know, and I see it through families, and people deny it. And, we didn't catch any of that stuff. Well, you may not have the substance abuse genetics, but you definitely caught a bunch of the emotional stuff. Because if you've gone the total other side of the road and decided that this is nasty and horrible and awful and I will never touch it and all this stuff, and even if you're able to do that, the pressures on your life from the way you think will cause you as much internal damage as the guy, you know, who goes out and determines that he's going to escape with booze, drugs, rock and roll, sex, whatever. So there's no escape from this stuff. How do you get out of it? What do you think about two kinds of people? Are you pretty much in agreement with that, or do you see shades of gray? You know what I mean? Like, I'm black and white by nature, which is, you know, ultra codependency, if you will. It's a control thing that I think is somewhat under control in my life, but only because I've given up control.
It's a very gray area, the thin line between good and bad.
Well, you're a Christian man, okay? Yeah. You like women, I like women. How do you handle that?
I try not to think about it these days. or maybe like a politician says, no comments.
Plead the fifth or something, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is good and bad in this world, but the way... See, I live my life on a day-to-day basis. I don't really think about what's going to happen tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But just for today, in my opinion, if you do something bad, it's going against God's commandments or His teachings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am bound to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm human after all, I'm not perfect. But at least that awareness is there inside me that...
Mm-hmm.
As a Christian man, that yes, I'm doing something wrong. And if I get a chance to rectify it or do something about it, then I go ahead and do it. I try not to seethe in it, because that's what I did before, and then the result, everybody knows what happened. I do get caught up sometimes in the social media, the way life is.
Yeah.
But given a choice, if I want to be sober, I want to go down that road again. You know, get caught up in all that lifestyle and going to pubs or listening to music or getting drawn into... I think it's a web of deceit and lies, that whole world outside there. I don't want to go down that road. I think I'm happy for this for today, where I am today. I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. And do you think a lot of that resides in staying close to your fellowship and close to the people who are... doing that? I mean, you are doing some form of recovery work every day of your life, pretty much, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you don't get to a meeting for whatever reason, you know, you're still reading, whether it's these devotionals or from the big book or One Day at a Time or whatever it is. You know, there's always that connection. And I think that connection is a necessity, you know, for life, like for my life, for my emotional sobriety, which I want to talk a little bit about. You know, because without that, the other sobrieties are very, very difficult, as you know. Maybe we should just go there. Emotional sobriety, what does that mean to you? Like, how do you keep yourself emotionally sober so that you don't get angry and get tempted into the other areas where you could, you know, end up abusing a substance or taking a drink or whatever? You know, because emotional... to me is everything. If I'm even, you know, and not under control, because I don't think we're ever under control, but if I'm sort of even keeled and I'm, you know, thinking and haven't had one too many coffees or something, I'm able to kind of sail through life. But if I don't do those things, I not only don't sail, I fail, you know. So how do you keep emotionally sober or you know, emotionally even comfortable, whatever that means to you. How do you do it? Like, do you have a way, or is that just part of your program? A result of your program?
Yeah, it is a part of the program, that's for sure, but it's a good thing you brought that up, because I was reading about, I don't know, my memory's not very good. It's John 12, where God says, if you want to keep life, or you lose it, something.
Well, one of the things, and it's making me think of the program, is you've got to give it away to keep it. I don't know if that's along the same line, but I don't think it is. But say what you were saying again there, see if it rings a bell.
That's what I'm trying to remember, the exact verse. If you try to keep your life to yourself, you will lose it. But if you lose your life and you give it away, then you will gain eternal salvation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's in the same words.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's the same line. I'm not sure.
So that's the same thing in the program. You have to share. I have to share what I have.
Yeah.
What was given to me freely.
Yeah.
If I don't share, that means I'm being a very selfish, conceited person. Yeah. And I think working the program with someone else is another part of recovery. Yeah. It's another form of recovery because you're not only helping the other person, but I'm helping myself too.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it has to be a little about God and his teachings, it's up to that person, the other person who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
If that person, he or she wants to accept it or not, that's up to them.
Yeah.
But that's where I find my emotional sobriety. Honestly, I struggle with relationships. Mm-hmm. I'd be very frank about that.
Yeah, yeah.
When I see my friends having girlfriends and wives, and I said, why the hell can't I have one? I wonder. And that's where I struggle. And then I have to take a step back, and then I have to see that what I have gained today. My biggest thing is when it comes to certain things, I have two main aspirations: is get my sister into the country, and be with my sons under one roof, if I can one day. In the sense, like, you know, I have my own place where they can come over. Yep. I can go and pick them up. Those are the main things that I dream about.
Mm-hmm.
Any other materialist things, I'm not so concerned about, because I live in Barrie, and I'm not trying to be modest, but if you go down the roads, drive down the roads in Barrie in the night, you see a lot of people homeless, people who are suffering from addiction. People don't even know that there's a world that exists outside their world of addiction, and that gives me a place of gratitude, that I'm grateful for what I have today. So it's not the materialistic things, it's what God has given me, and what the program has given me is what keeps me happy. There are some times where I want everything, but that's human,
human nature.
Human nature. But I'm happy with what I have.
That's good. You know, I was going to say purpose is the program provides its own purpose. You know, that's what I've always felt. People don't have something they need to do that gives them a sense that they're productive people. They're worthwhile. They have some esteem because they think about who they are in the context of, you know, maybe God created me and all these other people. You know, apparently he doesn't make any mistakes, so I must have some value to me. But I've always found when I thought I had some sort of purpose, like going into jails and talking to people is seemingly what I'm supposed to do. It's where I feel most successful. It's where I see most change in people happening really fast. So, you know, I get great satisfaction out of that. Like, no matter how far I go or no matter what day it is, and now it's, you know, many years I've not taken any kind of holiday so that I can do that consistently, because I know the answer to any of these programs is a consistency, which unfortunately for those who are incarcerated is very difficult to have. You know, they can't make their own decisions or locked in cells half the time, and you know, when the program is supposed to appear and it can't, they do without, etc., etc. It's you know, it's a price we pay, and it's a lot less of a price than it is even south of the border in jails. It's a lot more dangerous and so on, but it's the price we pay. But purpose seems to reside in working one of these programs. You know, your purpose in life becomes, well, you know, I shared, someone else shared with me, we shared, and together we seem to be able to be healthier, you know. And now there's people all over the streets, Barrie, Toronto, wherever, who are sleeping out there and, you know, actually lying down, and most people will cross the street, you know. Reminds me of the Good Samaritan in Scripture, you know. Most people will cross the street to not have to bring that that disastrous piece of society into their lives. You know, that's the way they look at it. It's a fearful thing. I can't go there because, you know, I can't, my mind can't handle association with this person lying in the road who can't do something for themselves. The reality is their weaknesses are insulated by staying away from that. You know, because they go there, they have to admit that this is a real person, you know, with a life, and, you know, it could be me. And that's I think, where the rubber meets the road and all this stuff, is that could be me, you know. But for the grace of God, you got orange on and I've got blue or whatever, you know, in the whole jail system. And you're the prisoner and I'm not. I could be the prisoner and you could be me. The guy lying in the street, that could be me. And unless I know that and understand that and accept that, I'm always going to feel that I'm better than somebody else. So, what did I teach myself through all of that? Something I probably knew a long time ago, but that's the reality. But for the grace of God, there go I, you know. And I don't know, that's one of my favorite slogans too. So, what do you think? You're in Barrie, you're seeing a lot more of that than I am. You're obviously out sometimes in the middle of the night, or you wouldn't know, you wouldn't be able to tell me there's people there. So do you go looking for them? Is that a good reminder for you? Does that help you stay away? I know you do a lot of service. I heard from people sharing in your one-year celebration there that you're doing a lot of service, and you're going to some of the, you know, detox places maybe, and wherever, but always in that realm of recovery, addiction and recovery, and that, I think, keeps you on it. It's part of your program. It's one of the ingredients you need, you know. I don't know why or anything else, but you're out there and you see that. Why are you out there?
It's interesting you brought up the topic of the Good Samaritan. I don't know. I'm not... But I judge myself sometimes on that. I try to help people who I know can... How do I put this? Am I going to go pick up a drunk on the road and take him to detox or try and help him? I don't think I'm going to do that. That's where... Okay, let me go back. A few days back, I was closing up the place of work where I mean, this place. And we have two doors, the front and a door, because it's a restaurant. And I have to go through an alleyway to check the other door. And there was this drunk. He kept falling. And people passed him by. And guess what? I passed him by too.
Mm-hmm.
Because do I have the ability to go up to him and try and take him up and do something for him? No. Two things that struck me that night, now since you brought it up, is what's going to be, whether he's going to turn around and be grateful for what I do for him.
Yeah.
That's one thing. You don't know what kind of a person, what state of mind is he in.
No.
And the second thing that bothered me is I saw myself in him.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't fall in the streets, but I fell at home couple of times,
yeah.
And it brought back, you know, memories, bad memories about who I used to be. So that's another reason why I walked away from him.
Hmm. But that's honest, though, Raj, to be able to see ourselves in those people, like that's the reality. And if we can't, I think we're in trouble. You know, we have a superiority complex if we think, you know, because someone has an addiction or a disease, and even if they don't believe it's a disease, but they don't have this thing that makes them automatically feel better than, you know. But I think what you're saying is a whole bunch of different dynamics there, but looking at the person and like you say, thinking, well, you know, that could be me, and that was me, or, you know, or is me in a different era. That's scary. I don't want to feel that anymore. You know, I've already felt that. I've lived that. I don't want to live it anymore. Yet, you felt wrong by not doing anything for the guy, or we wouldn't be talking about it. You know what I mean? So, and I think back to people like Mother Teresa. That's what impresses me so much, is not that she dedicated her life to helping other people or something. It was that when she came upon a need, she stayed with that need until that need had absolutely everything she could give it. And I thought, man, if I could ever be that, and I'm no different than you, sometimes I'll it's almost a show-off thing. I'll go to those people because no one else will. You know what I mean? Like, I'll go on the street and put my hand on somebody's neck and make sure he's got a pulse, you know what I mean? And wake them if I think he's in a dangerous place. But I won't always do it. And that, you know, for that, I could go two ways. I could judge myself and get down on myself, or I could say, you know what, that's just another part of my humanity. It's, you know, why I was allowed to do that by, you know, God or whatever, I don't know. But I got to accept. I got to move on. I got to move past these things every time. And if I don't, they're going to hold me down. And we know what that means, you know. You know, start resenting me. And if I start resenting me and start feeling the fears and the doubts and everything that goes with that, I'm going to slip back into something, you know, in my case, into a behavioral situation, which I don't like at all. And if I were of the addictive genetics, I'd have to escape, and that's what I'd use. But anyway, I'm not. And keep those thoughts, Raz. We're going to have to take another break here and maybe get a bit of a song from Master Raz, J. Ray Ball, Rum Ball over there. You like Ray or Rum better, but anyway.
Rum sounds good.
Okay, my man. Go for it.
Well, we got a week to go till Christmas, so I think it's time to play a little bit of Christmas music, time to get rocking around the Christmas tree. Here's Brenda Lee, and we'll be back here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.
Hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see, every couple tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling. You will get a sentimental feeling when you hear tree, have a happy holiday. Everyone dancing merrily in the new old-fashioned way. Have a happy holiday. Everyone